Welcome once again into the Soccer OG. Hey, that's me, Max Bretos. This is episode 191. As always, a reminder to rate, review, download, subscribe, tell a friend about our lovely global phenomenon of a podcast. Make sure you check out our YouTube, which is being heavily populated right now under my name, Max Bretos. Two big videos coming out this week. Some of these topics we will discuss here today. We are springing forward. Losing that hour of sleep, I always prefer it because we don't want it to be dark at 5 o'clock. But man, it takes a toll out of you for 4 or 5 days. Am I the only one? I know I'm not the only one. But we're going to spring forward. I feel better now. I'm sure you do too. It's been enough days. We are going to spring forward into March and in the business end. Listen, the Nations League roster has been announced for the U.S. men's national team for games March 21st and the 24th. This is the gateway to Copa America. The Copa America is the gateway to the World Cup. I have talked to former U.S. men's national team players, top journalists, content creators, and I get all sorts of perspective. I'm going to talk to my guy Vince La Rosa, who is very grounded and has a really good outlook on all things soccer. He's my sounding board, so I lean into my former colleague there on Inside LAFC. We will talk about the roster. He has a lot of great opinions on that announcement from Greg Berhalter and U.S. Soccer. We will be doing that in the business end. In stoppage time, we'll talk about the women who won the W Gold Cup and what it means and what we have looking forward for that program. Trophies matter, right? Trophies matter. Great show. Let's get started. You know the drill. The rundown's next. Well, finally, the Champions League round of 16 came to an end. I know. It had some nice highlights. Actually, the final match day turned out to be pretty good with Porto Arsenal on the edge of our seats. We had extra time at Atletico and Inter. That's not one for the time capsule. Tough couple weeks for the Serie A, who is a mightily improved league in some areas. But they had three of their teams all knocked out, so we're down to the final eight. I mean, Dortmund, PSV, Barcelona, Napoli had some moments of interest. That was it. I mean, it was bad. I say it's bad because now we're recording this on a Thursday. The draw will be on Friday. The quarterfinals are going to be phenomenal. They are going to be phenomenal when you have PSG, Bayern, Real Madrid, Man City, Barcelona, Arsenal, Dortmund, and Atletico. Atletico is not a fun team to watch, but no one wants to play them. We know how they can wreck a Champions League and how they can wreck it for Real Madrid. So Real Madrid will be holding their breath on that draw, hoping, wishing that they don't see Atletico's name pop up there. I think Real Madrid and Man City are clearly the favorites. I tend to think Bayern might have something. They're playing very well, scoring a ton of goals, and they have a manager who's done very well. Won a Champions League and reached the final both very recently. I wouldn't dismiss PSG. I wouldn't dismiss Arsenal, even though they haven't looked great in these Champions League knockouts. I don't know. Barcelona, I'm not ready to get excited about them. But look, the law of averages, right? Round of 16 stinks. Quarterfinals will be good. So we'll look forward to that. I got West Ham into the quarterfinals of the Europa League. Maybe they're going to win another trophy. Can you imagine West Ham in the Champions League? Whoo, one can dream. Liverpool would be a great story in the Europa League. They scored 4 goals in, 10 minutes in their game? Crazy. Crazy stuff, certainly. But again, this is nothing to celebrate. There's nothing to really talk about. Champions League round of 16, just no urgency with a couple exceptions. Obviously, that penalty shootout was entertaining at the Emirates. But now we have something good. We kind of knew it would go this way, right? This draw is going to be fascinating. I was going to wait to do this podcast, but then I said I couldn't wait any longer. I wanted to wait till the announcement of the roster for the U.S. men's national team, which we will talk about here shortly with Vince La Rosa in the business end. MLS, we're talking to Vince off the air. I mean, Toronto FC. I didn't really rate John Herdman. All I heard last year is that he was settling into the job. He hadn't really gotten experience coaching a club, so he didn't take over right away. And I go, this doesn't smell good. But now he looks like a genius. Maybe the guy knows his stuff. I was wrong about John Herdman. Because not only does he have Lorenzo Insigne scoring goals, he has him happy. He looks happy. So we have some of that. I think with the Champions League as well, switching to CONCACAF, I'll say it this way, because the Mexican press was very engaged when Pachuca blew the doors over Philadelphia Union and Tigres beat Orlando City pretty convincingly 4-2 on the aggregate. The Mexican media, the way they have reacted, and look, I follow all of them. I follow all of the shows. They are rubbing MLS's face in it, and I've never quite seen it like that, which means MLS, even in a horrible, horrible day. And I don't know how you spin that Philadelphia Union result. That was grotesque. Pachuca are not a top Mexican team. They are very limited with their roster. Philadelphia Union should, at the very least, be competitive. And to lose like they were playing Manchester City, that was brutal. But the Mexican media is paying attention. Remember the League's Cup? League's Cup was announced. I think, you know, the League's Cup, we got to just... It's a good tournament. People have their guard up because of everything that's happening with the U.S. Open Cup. They feel like it's one for the other. MLS has this vision. I'm telling you, the League's Cup has a higher ceiling. It has a higher... The Open Cup has got the history. It's a pathway so that we can be like leagues in other parts of the world. Which is appealing, but does it work here? It doesn't work right now. And MLS has to take care of themselves. So the League's Cup, we'll see what Liga MX has up their sleeve to get back into that. Obviously, they're at a disadvantage because all the games are played here in the United States. I hope there's an outlet to where play some games in Mexico. I would love to see that. But this in the Champions League, obviously, is going to... show you these two leagues are truly engaged. They're going to be Liga MX All-Stars again for the MLS All-Star game, which is better than the alternative when Arsenal came. I was, you know, on the field that day, and once those friendlies start, there's so much excitement in the city. There's so much excitement in the stadium. I kid you not, the referee blows his whistle and the excitement dies. No one cares anymore. It is watching paint dry. So this is a better one. There are so many spicy moments in these matchups in the past, so we welcome it back. And then a few days later, the League's Cup. But I think the engagement of USA-Mexico is a big plus. As I said here in the past, the ability for MLS to gain growth south of the border and amongst the Mexican community in the United States could be the biggest growth area for the next few years. And you'll take it. You'll take growth anywhere you can get it. And certainly that, because these leagues are going to be engaged. We see it not just with the League's Cup, with the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but also with the All-Star Game. And this a lot of people, you know, shoveled it at MLS this year. And they deserved it. You know, results like the ones they had, they certainly deserve it. But I would say people are kind of piling that on past years for the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And adding it like it's more MLS failures. And we got to stop there because MLS has been very good in this competition. They won it 2 years ago with Seattle. LAFC certainly could have won it last year. They've made finals the last few years. They've had multiple semifinalists. So this could bounce back. Now, that said, the two best candidates to win it for MLS are still in the tournament, and that is the Columbus Crew and Inter Miami. And I'm sure these teams are going to be very excited about the prospects of playing Inter Miami, who beat Nashville. At the time of taping, we know Columbus and Tigres will play. Club America's through. Pachuca plays Herediano. Philadelphia got to be kicking themselves because they beat Pachuca, they get Herediano. And all due respect to the Costa Rican side, you probably have a pathway to a semifinal. Monterrey, Cincinnati, and then it looks like the New England Revolution. But, Miami... And Messi's participation is going to really push this tournament as well. And obviously, there's more eyeballs south of the border. We have a good show, so I'm going to cut there's a lot more things to talk about, but we're going to get into the business end here. Vince La Rosa talks to me about the roster drop for the U.S. men's national team. Stick around for Check Complete. We'll put a bow on the W Gold Cup and what we see moving forward for the U.S. women's national team and the women's game in general. This is the Soccer OG. Great to have you along for the ride.
We are back here on The Business End. A gentleman who has joined me several times here on the podcast and a variety of podcasts, Vince LaRosa, back again. And we would normally talk, we were together with the LAFC podcast, we talk MLS. But I want you to walk me off the ledge with regard.
Oh, no.
Maybe not. That's too strong. With regards to the U.S. men's national team, the Nations League roster, I talked to some of the journalists. I talked to whatever we want to call them, the folks that do videos on YouTube, the folks that influence U.S. men's national team content, you name it. And I wanted to get you. You always strike me as a very sensible young man.
That's right.
And the thing is, not many people, I think you look at this roster, not many folks are upset about it. It's a strong roster. Just an overview from you. I mean, we're preparing for two big games in the Nations League, which will set the table for Copa America. Copa America will set the table for the World Cup. A strong team, most of which you could see in a variety of leagues all over the world. Established guys that maybe were a bit green in the World Cup. It's a nice feeling to know you have some seniority, and obviously you have a lot of talent.
Well, and how can you not be excited by a couple of things that are going to be very important, regardless of whoever is on the fringes? Like the fact that Christian Pulisic is joining this camp in the best form he's been in. And he's even said, like, this is the best I've ever played, despite being a Dortmund, despite winning a Champions League at Chelsea. Like right now, the way he's playing for AC Milan, best he's ever played. Tyler Adams back. We don't know what, like at what level, but you know that come 2026 or even before that Copa America, like that's going to be an important guy. Weston McKennie also playing the best football he's ever played. Like the guys that are the core guys, like we can argue about like guys around the fringes, but can't we all agree that if McKennie, Adams, Pulisic, and we add somebody like Musa and Reyna, if those five guys are playing their best football come 2026, isn't that our best shot at doing anything at any kind of tournament? So I get it. And I'll say this. Around the world, they're going to argue about rosters every single national team called. France is arguing about their roster. Brazil always arguing about their roster. I don't think there's ever one time where Brazil goes,
we're good.
We did it. There's no
perfect
arguments from us. Done. Well done. You cracked the code. I've got no notes. So this is I know it doesn't make people feel good per se, but it's like it's a good problem to have. Like, didn't we want to get into the upper echelon of where we became a footballing nation? Well, guess what? They argue about their national team, despite maybe being a World Cup winner or the best in their region. And if we're arguing about the fringes, then we're pretty good.
Yeah. And we are arguing about the fringes. I don't think people are arguing too much. I think it's pretty straightforward. And I think the roster, when it was announced, there was going to be two or three loose ends. And those are the three loose ends that the fringes are talking about. The 18, 19 players are pretty solid that they were going to make it. 12, 13 guys are pretty solid that they are going to feature, and we move on. I will talk about the fact that some of them may not be playing as much as we would like, but we'll talk about that in a moment. I wanted to mention Tyler Adams because you brought it up. It's peculiar to see him in there, and I've had maybe 24 hours to think about it, but I like the idea that you incorporate him back here with the thought that in the summertime he could be a featured player once again. We know what he can do. He brings so much more to the team than just his play. He's a leader. He no nonsense. He's everything about it. So I was surprised when I saw his name on there, but I've warmed up to it very quickly with the prospect of, okay, get him in now. Let him spend some time in camp with his buddies. And so when June, God willing, he's healthy, he can hit the ground running and not only make the roster for the Copa America, but start for this U.S. men's national team. Because that position, there's good options, but I don't feel comfortable putting Johnny Cardoso there yet. I'm getting closer to that. I still would rather see Tyler Adams in that position. And I would rather see that than the Musa McKennie Reyna midfield. I don't know who you would move out of that to accommodate Adams, but you move somebody in my estimation.
Mm-hmm. Musa McKennie Reyna is an interesting midfield against certain opponents, but ultimately Tyler Adams is again one of those core players where, like, regardless of guys getting better, he's just so much further progressed with the national team. It's going to take a lot to catch him up, and I'm with you, Max. When I look at it, I see them saying, okay, you're finally healthy. We know you're going to be part of this. I know no one's like really untouchable. There is a way, there is a world in which Tyler Adams doesn't start for the national team at Copa America, doesn't start for the World Cup. But again, I think we can all agree that if he does, that is the United States' best chance. And this is kind of your captain. Like, this is your leader guy, the guy that people have kind of been asking for since we've had, you know, leaders in the 90s and 2000s. And this is the guy. So why wouldn't you allow him to be around the group? It just, I don't know. It's just something, you and I talk about this all the time, Max. We talk about this with coaches. And I know everyone wants to talk about tactics. And I like tactics too. Where it drives me the most crazy is when people just bring up tactics with no reference. They're like, what? His tactics aren't good. And then they don't tell you why. That really drives me crazy. But I think more so what now driving me crazy is the fact that people think that tactics win the entire game. It's literally just a percentage of the game. And I think a national team manager, almost more than anyone, even more than a club coach, although I do think we've lessened the importance of man management and a club coach, is like, think he's got to manage personalities. He's got to manage attitudes. Like, he knows the best players and he knows who's going to give him kind of the best window to win. And then he has to fill in around that. And I think Tyler Adams is part of that group of the core guys that he's saying, look, they've come so far and we're, yes, I would love if somebody came, showed up and looked Tyler Adams right in the eye and was like, I'm taking your spot, and played in a way he could, but is that really going to happen? Like, I think we can all agree, like, the guy's progressed far enough and the hope is he's going to continue to progress. So why not get him in to keep that process going?
Yeah. And look, we have a conveyor belt of players that have to deal with injuries and we have to incorporate them back in there. We're not in a position where you can just say, sorry, we these injuries, there's got to be some sort of grace period. But some players apparently pay a heavier price for injuries than others. But whether it's Pulisic, the minute he's ready to go, you incorporate him. Gio Reyna's had his injuries, and I think that certainly applies for Tyler Adams, who's 25 and into the, you know, the sweet spot of his career. Back playing with Bournemouth in, by the way, one of the best. I just saw the highlight package of it last night because we were watching Champions League. And he played 18 minutes or so. Luton Town was up 3-0.
3-0.
Came back to win 4-3. I was like, I heard about it, so I watched it, and it lived up to the hype. Excellent, excellent. Good goals. Wildly entertaining, much more entertaining than you ever thought Bournemouth-Luton could possibly be. So there you go. The midfield, we mentioned some of those guys, and again, a healthy Tyler Adams, not in the Nations League. He may come in, I think, as a substitute in one of these games. But again, in the Copa America, how it would look, I would like to see Musa, McKennie, and Reyna in that midfield. I think the problem with that for me is the way we've seen Weston McKennie play at Juventus, I would love to see that on the national team, but we'll handcuff him because I think there's more defensive duties there if you have Gio Reyna. It's a big decision for Greg Berhalter. You've got the talent, but how do you use it? Against Gio Reyna and Yunus Musa, you also have Tim Weah. You also have Matt Turner. Key players that aren't playing a lot for their club. And this is an age-old discussion. And I tend to think if they're talented enough, you play them regardless. But it's not ideal. Mm-hmm. It's not ideal. And it's not ideal to have four key players like that that aren't regular participants with their club.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel about this, Max, but I worry less about goalkeepers, especially.
Fair. Like,
I would almost put him not in that group. But Tim Weah is one that's very curious to me because I'm a Juventus fan. I would hope he would do better. He struggled with some injuries. And then Juventus is not an easy lineup to crack, and there's a lot of weird stuff that goes on there. But I think, again, in every national team, there's a couple guys that, like, they just place better for their national team. And it makes no sense because we're always told this. The best club players get to go play for the national team and get that chance. But it's like the exception that proves the rule. There's a couple of guys, and I think Tim Weah is one of those guys that, like, Greg just, he does seem to play better with the national team than he does with any of his club teams at any given point. And you got to remember, even when he was with Lille, like, there was times where he wasn't in that lineup, then would come play for the national team and drop like two goals in a cycle. So I think when Greg looks at him, he's saying, look, I get what, 2-3 days with these guys. I need some continuity and some guys that, like, when they show up here, I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to reteach them what we're doing. And I think some of those guys fit into that, but in a precarious nature. Cause I think when they come in, he looks at Tim and goes like, hey, you're here. Chance you could not be at the next one. Like, you got to really step it up. And I'm sure those conversations happen. I'm sure Tim doesn't even need to have, he's been around long enough He knows that, like, if I don't start playing more, a guy like a Brendan Aaronson, who Greg has basically said, hey, man, this really hurts, but use it to get better. You know, you're on the outside now, but that doesn't mean that it's said and done. It's not permanent. Like, he sees the guys behind his shoulder. So I think these are good. I think what we're really breaking down here, Max, is like a lot of dynamics that go on within the national team. And even though, again, we all want to imagine you do great for a club team and then everyone competes just to be the best guy on the national team, it's just not the way it works.
And that, beggars can't be choosers, but we move on. But the Gio Reyna one is so peculiar because, I mean, we look at all of those guys, but the Gio Reyna one, because not only is he not playing, it seems like he is on an island. I mean, it's sure. Can't catch a break, set adrift, and this Nottingham Forest move could not have gone any worse. I think everyone thought it wasn't ideal, but nobody thought it would be this, where he's not even on the 18-man roster, and we don't really have an explanation. And I don't see him playing at all. Nottingham Forest, I mean, if they get a little bit closer to safety, which I think they will, because the bottom three is pretty defined right now in the Premier League, but they are not safe yet, and I don't think they're going to bring some guy out of the wilderness that they haven't played. Sure. They're 3 points up on Luton. So imagine if Luton held on against Bournemouth. Nottingham Forest would be in a real dilemma, and there are, 10 games left? So I don't see him playing. So that's going to take him to the Copa. So this is a conversation we're going to continue to have, and it's not a good one. And at some point, and Greg Berhalter addressed it last week, saying, you know, we're keeping tabs on it, and in so many words saying, look, I don't know if I can play a guy 90 minutes or 80 minutes or 70 minutes who's not playing at all. And who knows what the training sessions are like.
Right. Yeah. Fitness aside, you look at this as like a man management job. Greg knows his history with Gio Reyna. He knows what's gone on between the both of them. And I think in a lot of ways, he's looking at it this, and star players get treated differently. I think we can all agree Gio Reyna is probably the most talented player on this roster, regardless of when he's playing or not. If you just roll the ball out there and say, who's the best player at what they do and the most skilled, it's Gio Reyna. And I think he sees a guy that's struggling, that he has a history with, and he's kind of thrown him a lifeline and said, hey, bud, I get it. Not great right now for you. Why don't you come out here, get some good vibes? Hey, maybe, you know, we're always talking about how you have to play well for your club and that translates to national
get
team.
Some good
maybe coming, yeah, maybe, well, maybe showing up with the national team is going to give him that springboard to then go and do better for Forest. Now, that situation, though, is tough for him. He's on a strict loan with a manager who's just trying to save his job. And I can understand that manager at Nottingham Forest being like, well, why am I going to play a guy that I don't even know if he's going to be here? I don't know like you go with your guys, you go in with those guys, you live and die, you know, you go down with the ship with those guys. But I just think ultimately it was a man management job. He understands the talent of Gio Reyna, understands their past. And this was the smartest move, whether or not he's playing or not. I think he had to call him in and just say, like, come on in. Let's keep our relationship going. Let's keep the communication going. And maybe you're here with your buddies. You, like I said, you feel the good vibes, you feel good, and you go back and you translate that into your club form and you feel a little bit better on your day-to-day with your club.
Very good. So, and that's interesting because going back to the World Cup, you know, the situation with the Berhalter and the Reynas, and I tell this to people, it's like, say what you want. Greg could view this very differently and come in harsh, and he has extended that branch because this is a safe place for Gio, and it's really important for him because he needs a place to turn to if it's not with the club and the walls have to be closing. It's not with his parent club at Dortmund. Maybe it will be in the future, but he's in I have to imagine a really tough spot, and I would like to say it's an obligation for the U.S. team to keep him upright, but not necessarily has to be. The U.S. has to do what's best for them. But this is a very talented player, and I'm glad they're handling it this way. We gotta protect him, and we've got to lift him up. And if it continues in a year, then I think you have a more difficult discussion sure. and decision.
Yeah, because ultimately, it's not right now. You would say it's probably not at the expense of anybody that really is like not just deserves to be there, but anybody that you think come 2026, like, that's a guy I need on my roster. I can't lose him. I think you look at this Reyna situation and you say, like, if I don't bring him in here, there's a world in which, as you said, everything's closing in around him. He feels like his back is against the wall, that nobody cares about him. Let's say you don't call him in. Things don't go well with Forrest, but he moves on because of his talent, and he starts lighting the world on fire. How is that conversation going to go when you go, ah, hey, bud, I know you weren't playing. Remember? Like, it's okay. Like, come in now. I don't foresee that as going well. So I think he's maybe thinking a step or two ahead. But I agree with you. There's got to be a point where maybe he has to make that hard decision. I just don't think we're anywhere close to that yet with Gio Reyna.
No. Again, it's he's an important piece because even when he wasn't playing and they brought him into the camp in October and the end of last year, he was great. He was a very important player and productive for us. The forward situation, we love Pulisic. I had Brian Charette on a couple weeks, and he said Tim Weah could be interesting because he could go to right back because of the Serginho Dest situation. It's a nice backup plan. I would imagine Joe Scally plays there. I'm fine with, you know, the selections of everyone. The big one was, were we going to get three forwards? And it opened up an opportunity for Josh Sargent. We all said, yeah, because he can maybe play out wide. He could play maybe somewhere not in the attacking three, but I don't think they're bringing him in for that. I think they're bringing him in to potentially put pressure on Balogun and Pepe and potentially score goals, if not the Nations League here. But it's important to incorporate him, too, for a guy that, you know, this would have to be, you know, you have guys like Brandon Vasquez and Haji Wright, and Greg Berhalter mentioned Jordan Pefok in his press conference. You have those guys that are pushing to get on the roster and all have a case. They're all playing well. But I think Josh Sargent, because of that time he hasn't been with the national team, this was important to come in there. I think they had to have had a discussion with Norwich, who are in a promotion fight. They would love to keep Josh Sargent here, but I imagine Josh Sargent keep him with the club. But Josh Sargent had to say, look, this is my career. I've had my injuries, another one with injuries. Right. I got to get back into the fold. Even if I don't play, I got to get into a camp. I got to be with Greg Berhalter, and I got to be with my teammates.
Yes, 7 goals in his last 8 games. A guy that was injured for much of the back half of last year. Like, he's an example of what Greg wants to see from guys that are bouncing back from adversity. And he already has been with the group. He obviously was at the World Cup, so he believes in him. He's a player that he likes. I think what we're dancing around is, like, should Brandon Vasquez have been there? I mean, should, yes, but he's not. Like, there's a lot of guys that maybe should be there, but he's not. Like, he's going to have to make some hard decisions. And again, Josh Sargent's already been there. He's done exactly what Greg has asked him to do by bouncing back and done it to an exceptional degree at Norwich, with, like I said, with 7 goals in 8 games. So it's like, he deserves to be there. I think I really want to see Brandon Vasquez there eventually. I think that he provides a different type of profile, but I kind of agree this maybe isn't the window. It's just 2 games. You got to win the semifinal and then you got to win the final. Maybe not the best time to bring along a guy like that. Maybe get him in, you know, subsequent camps when it's a little bit easier for him to learn the tactics and play in a way that he has a little bit more freedom, as opposed to we got to get results now. And so Greg goes with a guy that he knows, a guy that if he's going to bring him to the World Cup, you're not afraid to bring him to a Nations League semifinal and final.
That's true. This is, again, we need to get the result in the Nations League. It would be really uncomfortable if the U.S. lost to Jamaica or really didn't win the Nations League. They're going to be the favorites here because it's here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And you want to get in that habit because the Copa America is going to be here in the United States and the World Cup is going to be in the United States. And I think the flaws the U.S. have away from home is one thing, but we know everything is in front of them, and that is get the results. If you can show you're getting results at home, just like, you know, I use what happened in AFCON and the Asian Cup, the host nations won. That's no accident. There's a big boost. So this is all good practice with regards for the U.S. showing that they not only get it right in the Nations League so that you can get it right in other competitions. Although there'll be much more pressure, obviously, this summer, and obviously much more pressure in 2026.
Sure. But how else do you build towards that? It's doing exactly what you said. Get it right here. It's one piece of the puzzle. You keep building. It's all about building. And that's something that is really important with the national team. Like, this is not, you can get upset or you can say this and that about this cycle, but this cycle is, it's never really about this cycle, right? It's always about the big picture down the road.
Let's go back to the roster. I did a little pivot there. Defensively. Okay.
And I also mentioned to Brian Chiaretta, and he got me very worried because he talked about the center back situation, which is pretty dire. And, you know, I told him, I go, the thing about the U.S. and what I try to explain, certainly during the World Cup, what Greg Berhalter wants to do, and I think every manager wants to do this. I mean, this is no secret. They want to make their team, A, very hard to be to, on the national level, very hard to score against. They want their teams to, at times, maybe not possess a lot of ball, whatever is required, but be very tough to score against, very tough to beat. It is tried and tested. France do this. Argentina do this. Sometimes it's not pretty, and the U.S. isn't pretty because we all see these great attacking players and we want to go. But the reality is, if you want to have tenure, if you're Greg Berhalter, and if you want to have sex, if you're success, not sex, if you want to have, if you want to have success, you've got to be very stingy on the defensive end. And they were in 2022. You know, before that Dutch game, they allowed one goal. It was awesome. So I don't know if we have the same hearts in place to be able to do that, which will put pressure on the attacking players to score more goals. Obviously, the Matt Turner, I don't worry too much about it, but the center back situation, which was Zimmerman and Ream at the World Cup, did a nice job. There were some other guys hovering around. Cameron Carter-Vickers is a great prospect. He's injured. There is Chris Richards, who is our number one prospect, playing pretty regularly at Crystal Palace. I feel much better about him. Then you have a big draw. I mean, you have Miles Robinson, who we'll talk about here in a moment, and Mark McKenzie made it. Austin Trusty on the outside looking in. And then the next generation of guys between 18, 19, 20, 21, there's no, very few. There's Jalen Neal. There's really not a lot of top center backs. We're not doing a great job developing it. So it's a bit of a problem now. It could be a bigger problem in the future. But what do you say about what we have now? Everywhere I was on social media, I had to defend Miles Robinson time and time again. I know why people don't want them. It's no big secret. We could spin it here and there and form an injury. I love how all of a sudden the injury situations come in, but that doesn't apply to other players. It is because he plays in Major League Soccer. I don't know if people aren't watching it. I watch him a fair bit. He didn't have a good year last season. And I'm not saying he's a great lockdown center back for the national team, but in the situation we're in, he is, to me, the best option. I think I wouldn't be surprised at some point in one of these games, it would be Richards and Robinson starting. Because Ream is another guy who's not playing, and he's also hitting that wall that we all thought with getting to be an older player. It just happens. So I spent most of my time defending Miles Robinson. I can't do it anymore, and because it's like a losing battle, but I know, you know, I know part of why that's there. I would love to have a conversation. I would love to watch video and everyone watch and break it down and say, okay, what drives you crazy that if we're looking at tape, because you can't look at tape of Austin Trusty and tell me, yeah, lock him in. He's been great. What they had the game a week ago against Arsenal. They were picking on him. I know it's Arsenal, but sure. That's not just them. It's Sheffield United all the time. You can't look at that and say, all right, put him in there. The only reason you would is because he's a starting defender and not always a center back for a English Premier League side. So it's been infuriating. You know, we've gone through this as well about MLS quotas, quote unquote. Clearly that was a make-believe thing because there are two MLS players. We've had zero MLS players in the past, and that's good. I'm all for that. But right now we need at least one MLS player, and that's Miles Robinson. We could argue about Drake Callender. I would have probably picked Gaga Slonina, but or maybe a different MLS goalkeeper than him. But
sure.
Miles Robinson, why do we do this?
I mean, you know the short answer, but let's talk about Miles Robinson as an actual player. I think if you watch tape of him, you're not going to have much of a leg to stand on because, Max, you're 100% correct here. The national team and ultimate success on the national level is being good in both boxes and being good on set pieces. It really is. Like, I would love to have a codified style play that's really sexy to watch and really fun. I would love to have a star player that's of the level of like the Mbappes and stuff like that. But it's been proven that even if you don't have those, if you're good in both boxes and you're good at set pieces, you will succeed. And when you look at Miles Robinson, The dude is a physical specimen. And I think the one knock on him, it's true. Miles Robinson is not the best ball playing center back, right? And so everybody wants a Virgil Van Dijk out there or somebody like that.
With passing the ball. Yeah,
there's only so many Virgil Van
Dijk. I don't think he's terrible at that. I think he gets a bad rap. He's adequate.
He's adequate, right? And so, and I'll be honest with you, 99% of the center backs around the world are in that same boat or worse. Like, there's only so many Virgil Van Dijks that can eloquently take the ball out of the back and then hit a 60-yard diagonal on a dime to a winger. Like, it's just not happening. So, but can Miles Robinson defend his box? Can he play in moments where he's going to have to use his recovery speed and physicality to chase down a guy to get out of an emergency situation? Absolutely. Can he be good on set pieces? Yes, he can be good on set pieces, both defensively and offensively.
Scored a goal 2 weeks ago, and he scored one of the biggest goals in recent years for the U.S. in the Gold Cup final.
And the MLS stuff, if that's the way you feel, then that's the way you feel. But Miles Robinson made a decision for his own personal well-being and for his life and for his family. The dude had massive injuries, and I think if he doesn't have those injuries, we're not even having this conversation because he's probably already gone. He had gone to Europe, tried it out. Hopefully he had been doing well, but he did. And so he had to make a decision knowing his own injury history, knowing that his window is short, but that doesn't change the fact that his physical presence and his ability to play the game is still at a high level. And I think it does the job for the United States. Center back is a question. It is the biggest question. Brian was right. It's the biggest question for the national team. And it has been since Tim Ream started the World Cup and was so good. Like, it's such a good story, but in the back of your mind and probably in the back of Greg's mind, he's probably thinking, wait, this guy is my guy at the World Cup. This is a problem.
That was an underreported story. I go, dude, we had like this knight in shining armor come out of left field and Tim Ream and basically saved the day because we had this incredible defensive record. And, you know, look, we talked about, I'd speak to Aaron Long all the time. He was the object of all that. Is he a starting World Cup center back? No. Is he a guy on the fringe of a roster? I think so. Maybe 2020, 2021. By the way, we did a huge disservice to him, and we're doing it again to Miles Robinson. And I think if you're a U.S. men's national team fan, you don't air that out publicly about players. You kind of go on, but it gets nasty, and, you know, that's a conversation for another day. But I love Aaron. I think he's really good. But if it was Zimmerman and Aaron Long for the World Cup, we should have gotten a little bit nervous. I don't think that's a pairing that you trot out at the biggest game for the national team. And that's just further to the myth of this Tim Ream scenario, which hopefully still has some legs to it.
Yeah, but again, your biggest worry with Walker and Aaron playing at the same time is only really in one specific defined area. They're not able to pass very well. So teams will say, okay, we'll let them have the ball. There's ways to scheme around that. And I think the national team has midfielders and wingers and the ability to go around that. That wouldn't be, again, if I'm the national team manager, my biggest concern is keeping clean sheets and scoring on the other end, not being sexy in the way I play out with my center backs or build up. I don't care. Look, I would defy any national team coach if I said, look, if I can give you a center back, he could kick it 80 yards and the rest of your guys somehow figure it out and score a goal every time. Would you do that? I don't think any of them would be like, well, it's not going to look good. I think they would take it, especially if it means winning games. And it's not, and that's the thing. It's not even that bad, right? Like, they're not that bad, but there's no Virgil Van Dijk-esque player that's just going to step in. I love Chris Richards. You and I both talked about this. When he got into midfield, which is where he was going to have to be maybe a little more expansive in his passing, he looked like a center back playing midfield. He played 6 and 7 yard passes all around, mostly backwards and sideways. He's not it. Do I think he's could be better on the ball than maybe Miles Robinson? Yes. So pair them together then. But I just, there's ways around this. Ultimately, I want two guys that can deal with the challenges, that have the recovery speed, and that will defend my box. That's all I care about, is making sure I have a clean sheet at the end of the day from my center backs.
Very well said.
Forward, four goals.
Greg Berhalter will have to address that too, because I think he thinks he can maybe get these center backs that can ping it out of that. Well, these guys are so rare. So rare when you have a Rudiger and Alaba, and I mentioned all the Real Madrid guys, and Van Dijk. They're just, it's like, this is the rarest of the rare to have a center back with that kind of passing range. It's still, I think we're still fleshing it out. To have players that at a young age want to become center backs and have that. I mean, I'm trying to think of a comparison
at a position, because it was just, you never did it. It's all very new. So I think the U.S. and Greg Berhalter will have to adjust in that. I think it's a very solid point that you make there, but it's we don't have it. And what was I was going to shoot the Richards thing. And this is another, I mean, this is a sidebar, because this is the thing. I think we have to get smarter the way we present the sport. When he was playing that, everyone was saying, can Chris Richards play as a six for the national team? And I'm like, you're not watching. You're not watching the games, because you would never say that if you saw how he's playing the position. I'm still shocked that they put him there. It was like playing with a back five or back six, really, was what Crystal Palace were doing. He was just a little advanced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's like, you know, you see like a lot of teams that play with three center backs now, and they'll just have one of the center backs step forward instead. They just already put him there, right? And you know, like you got someone like John Stones that can step into that position and then step into that position, not just during defensive phases, but during the buildup. Crystal Palace is no Man City, clearly. So they're just putting him there right away, and they're saying win balls and then get it forward. And you're right. He was interesting. I would say he was interesting in that position, but never like, if you can't tell me on one hand you want this profile of six and you want to be elegant, and then look at Chris Richards and go, I think he could do it. No. And I think even Chris would agree, like, that's not, I'm not putting him down. It's just not his profile.
No. But if you're Chris Richards and they say, I need you to play this position, you go, yes, I'm in. And it's allowed him now to settle into the center. You want to play. So it's great. Yeah. That was the story. Yeah, he's getting games. We don't spin it and say, hey, can he play six? It's coming, it's gone.
Well, he's competing. And that's all we want to see in certain instances.
You feel confident about this group? You like it?
I do. I think I agree with you. They should get the job done against Jamaica. And then, you know, you go to a final, which you normally would assume would be Mexico, but I wouldn't make any assumptions. Panama has some interesting players, and they've won some games. So, and I would say even, you know, Jamaica beating Canada, although Canada's kind of on this like refresh of their cycle, they still had some good players, and Jamaica had to go get a hard fought 3-2 victory in Canada in order to get past them. But yeah, the guy, again, the guys that you want to be at their peak right now, a lot of them are the Pulisics, the McKinneys. And then you've got guys in and around the fringe that can scheme. You can scheme your way and you can add some lineups and some adjustments. And I think you can do some things, but center back. Yeah. The biggest worry. And again, going back to what we said about national team games, defending your box and being good on set pieces. That's why they're the biggest worry.
Oof. Yeah, that worries me too, but we'll see how that fleshes out and who eventually stakes their claim there, but it's pretty slim pickings right now. By the way, you mentioned Canada. Do you want to get your love affair for John Herdman out? I mean, what's going on over there?
I hearing him talk after games and his willingness to speak about the tactical side of it, plus the man management side of it. I don't know. There's a couple coaches that from time to time when they speak and their openness, you hear them and you go like, I can understand why you would play for this guy and you would play hard for this guy. That's all I'm saying. I'm not in those rooms. Maybe he isn't as smart tactically as I think. I do think he probably is, but just the way he carries himself and has dealt with what in Toronto, I think we both can agree we thought was a dumpster fire and would continue to be, like, even three games in, I'm very surprised they're even close to where they are at this point.
Very nice. Vince LaRosa joining us here in the business, and always great to chat with you. And thanks for your sensical, commonsensical approach to all things football.
I'm happy. I'm happy to be here to talk anyone down from the ledge. I think that'll be my ultimate tagline.
That was too strong. It was too strong. I wasn't on the ledge. I just kind of wanted to set the table, but I was all good. I'm good.
But there might be some people out there, Max, that are.
Oh, yeah. Well, the center back situation, I think, is a reason for a little bit of alarm, but we'll see how that fleshes out here.
Vince, maybe we'll have to talk more after Jamaica.
Yes, we will. We'll be back. That's only, it's about a week away, so get ready for it. The Nations League right around the corner. We'll be back. We're in and out of the business end. Coming up on Check Complete, a quick little look back at the W Gold Cup, U.S. Women's National Team taking the trophy. Time now for Check Complete. I know it's a little further back in the rearview mirror, but the United States women's national team winning the inaugural W Gold Cup, beating Brazil in the final, which is always good, especially this much improved Brazil team. But I would start this
this dialogue by saying it's the inaugural Gold Cup and women's soccer in the Americas, like in the men's, we're hosting the Copa America. We have to lean into them. They have the history. They have the equity. They have the prestige. So we have to join the Copa America, really big picture. On the women's side, it could be in reverse. South America, the Copa America Femenino, doesn't quite resonate. Could benefit from the commercial aspects and the visibility aspects that you could from the Gold Cup. So the Gold Cup is going to grow. And I also want to say, I was watching a lot of the games. The production level was very good. I have a trained eye. I've been in this business for 3 decades. It was done with clearly a lot of cameras, a lot of post-production, a lot of access, and great facilities, which they were in line with. This was a big, big deal. And you could see it. It looked top, top rate. So there's obviously an investment in there. We all thought the Women's Gold Cup would be the worst thing the Women's Gold Cup, the W Gold Cup could be, is just a form for the U.S. women to flex their muscles, a place for them to do that, because it won't work. We would all be happy here to see the U.S. crush everyone in their path, the CONCACAF level, which is, until recently, well below their standard. And we'd celebrate, but the women's game would not grow. The women's game is growing all over the world. That's the best news for the U.S. women, that the competition's better, the leagues are better, the investment's better. We have NWSL starting this weekend, and they have $250 million broadcast deal over several broadcasters. That's only going to go up. I mean, the idea that someone would spend money to show women's soccer not that long ago was science fiction. And now they're doing it, and it's big money. And again, that's going to get higher. So the W Gold Cup, the inaugural one, a huge success, obviously for the U.S. women, but also for the standard and the tournament itself. And an earlier point I was going to make, you want a CONCACAF team to win this, right? Because it's your tournament. So the fact that they were able to beat Brazil is no minor detail. A special invitee or South American team will probably win the W Gold Cup, maybe sooner than later. But you didn't want to lose the first one. You want to stamp it with your best team, the U.S. So that is all important. The loss to Mexico, which sprung this U.S. women team forward, that is fantastic news for the U.S. women. And by the way, when I was listening to the broadcast and they said this is the first time the USA had lost to Mexico since 2010, I had to do a double take, because I was like, wait, we've lost to Mexico before? I couldn't believe it, but it's true. But getting Mexico to come up and all of a sudden have another natural rival in CONCACAF is just maybe the best news of everything. Maybe better than winning the W Gold Cup. That you can start to build this with Mexico, which you couldn't before. They didn't qualify for the World Cup. Jamaica made a run in the World Cup and didn't qualify for the W Gold Cup. So there's some interesting aspects there that certainly make this a little bit bigger. I'm going through all of these items before we kind of delve into the game, because it's good, but there's some issues here with the U.S. women's team that have to resolve. So developing the rivalries, becoming the Tournament of the Americas, and just adding another tournament period to keep people engaged with the national team is huge, right? The men have a defined Gold Cup. We get excited. You know, maybe not the entire American public, but the folks that follow soccer get excited for the Gold Cup. The Nations League's a little smaller. That resonates. And then we have the World Cup. Now we have this Copa America, which we hope continues to partner with South America in the years to come. How soon, again, we just don't know. The women have the Olympics, which are coming up here this summer. So this is a springboard for a real memorable 2024 for the U.S. women. You have the She Believes Cup, which we can't put on that level. And so it's very hard to find sometimes. But this W Gold Cup is huge to put on the calendar. So huge success. And, you know, the semifinals where you had USA, Canada, and then Jamaica and Mexico. Fantastic. You have the eyeballs of this region and beyond. And Brazil, who are playing much better, they are the reigning Copa America Femenino champs. They are starting to bring in a new young team, and it's paying huge dividends. Good, good, good. Good everywhere. Let's talk about the women. They bounced back. Tremendous run through this tournament. Quarterfinals beat Colombia with their tremendous superstars, or young, their one superstar, and their very competitive team that we saw in the World Cup. Then they beat Canada in some sloppy conditions. I will say this, because everyone was screaming. It's very, very performative, right? When we're all on social media, go, how could this game go on? It really, I mean, I've done it before, so I don't want to pass judgment on anyone, but we do it so much, and it's like nothing happens, but I think we want to pat ourselves on the back because we tweeted it out and said, hey, how's this game going on? Again, I've been there myself. I just look at it now, and I go, this is kind of rudderless. No one cares. No one cares about our little Twitter opinions. But they played that game, probably shouldn't have, and the question is, how do these teams adapt into that rain? And the U.S. did a nice job of adapting, and Canada put their foot in it. I mean, giving up these goals, knowing the ball was going to, the back pass on that first goal. So when you're dealt those conditions, you have to pivot as an athlete and figure out, how do I handle this? And the U.S. did a nice job, the Canadians didn't. If it was a better playing condition, who knows how that match turns out. The U.S. took advantage of those conditions. And then the win over Brazil. All good. Some young players starting to make a breakthrough. They are there. The question here for me is, are we empowering them? So I was surprised Jaden Shaw, the teenager, wasn't in the starting 11, but I think she's going to be there and make that breakthrough. Sam Coffey, a little older at 25, not really a young player, but making a breakthrough in this tournament. Corbin Albert, 20 years of age, making a breakthrough. Looks like she could be a mainstay for the foreseeable future. Trinity Rodman, 21, still want to see her fine-tune her game. She had some nice moments, but she had some not-so-nice moments. Rose Lavelle, I think, is 28, so we can't really conclude her. But where was Sophia Smith? I got to talk about Jenna Neiswanger, my Florida State Seminole there. This is what's worrisome, is Lindsey Horan and Alyssa Nair and Alex Morgan, who should, I mean, they just want to play. So if they're selected and they play, that's on the national team. But I almost wanted the younger team, even if it meant not winning the trophy, to get them in there. There's no reason Sophia Smith should not be starting every game, even if her play is below the standard of Alex Morgan. At some point, you've got to pass on the baton. And for better or worse, and if it's Sophia Smith's not that person, you find someone else. You can't keep trotting Alex Morgan out there, who, by the way, I found out is 34. I thought she was older. Not that she looks older, just because she's been around forever. And Lindsey Horan, who they still rely heavily upon, but I know there are players that might be able to fill these gaps, and they got to lean into them. Brazil did it, and it's paying off dividends. Now the United States has to empower that next generation, because as long as Lindsey Horan and Alex Morgan and Alyssa Nair are there and Becky Sauerbrunn, then this team will not be able to grow effectively. It is tried and tested. That's how this sport works. Once you sever the ties of that older generation, you can grow into the next one. And many times that next generation could be better. And we got to see it now. We got to see it now, because the world is engaged and playing and winning at very high levels. So there you go. A little bit on the W Gold Cup. Again, it was a few days ago, so I'm sure you got all the information, but you still waited for mine. I'm sure of it. The Soccer OG. Check out the Soccer OG on YouTube under my name, Max Bretos. New video published on Wednesday about the men's national team Nations League roster. The Soccer OG podcast library available with all sorts of topics. We delve into everything. Just look at all my guests. And like and subscribe us there. Rate, review as well. Tell us about your experience here, and we'll continue to provide the best possible pod for you soccer heads. The Soccer OG, until I see you again, I will be in Seattle this weekend for MLS duty with Dunseth, Seattle, Colorado. Had a great chat with Chris Armas today, 45 minutes. Chris Armas, now the coach of the Rapids. By the way, what a beautiful player he was back in the day. So on behalf of everyone here, I'll be there. MLS season pass on Apple TV. I've spoken for enough. Plácido Domingo.